I am so excited to have our next guest on. I've been talking about you, Bradley, C. Bradley Thompson, for a while, and this book. The name of the book is America's Revolutionary Mind. It has a tagline. Let me make sure I get the tagline here. A Moral History of the American Revolution and the Declaration that Defined It. Wow. Don't you think that would interest me? It certainly did. I've gotten a lot of books. This is my favorite book that it's got to be one or two. My favorite book that I've received in all my time on the Power Hour and interviewing, you know, geez, thousands of people now. This has been my favorite book I've ever gotten. I'm so excited to have him on. The name of the book, again, America's Revolutionary Mind. You can get it wherever books are sold. You can, I'm sure, Amazon or what have you. C. Bradley Thompson, welcome to the Power Hour.
Hey, how are you? It's great to be with you.
Very good. Is there a website that you have for this book, or just go on Amazon, or what would be the best way to buy it?
Yeah, no, I think the best way to do is just go to Amazon.com, and it's under C. Bradley Thompson, and the book is America's Revolutionary Mind, A Moral History of the American Revolution and the Declaration that Defined It.
We don't like Amazon here. Is there another alternative? A lot of our listeners, or is that the only place? Because
No. I'm sure there are lots of other places.
Barnes & Noble.
You know, Barnes & Noble.
Okay,
it's
good.
It's published by Encounter Press, so you could also go to Encounter Press and buy it directly from the publisher.
Well, there you go. Okay. We try to avoid Amazon where we can for a variety of reasons. But we're talking to C. Bradley Thompson. I'm going to call you Brad, if that's okay, for probably the rest of the interview. You're a professor at Clemson University. Tell us, how did that happen? A conservative professor that actually teaches capitalism at an American university. This is very odd.
So 14 years ago, I was asked to be the first executive director of what was going to be a new institute at Clemson called the Clemson Institute for the Study of Capitalism, and I jumped at the opportunity. And I want to tell your listeners that we're not economists. We don't do economics. What we do, what our specialty is to focus on the moral foundations of capitalism. So we think that capitalism can and must be defended primarily as a moral system and not less so as an economic institution.
That is very interesting. That's almost like a higher, it's kind of like the founders or the preachers of the time in the 1760s and 70s. We're not going to disagree politically with King George. We're going to disagree spiritually. You know, King George is offending God. We don't. You know, it seems like a much higher calling that you're having there.
Yeah, I think so. And you can think about it in these terms. For the last, 60 years or so, conservative, libertarian, free market economists have defended capitalism as the most productive and efficient economic system. It delivers more widgets faster and better than any other system. So in other words, they defend capitalism simply on economic grounds. The problem with that argument, however, is that Karl Marx and his descendants for the last 150 years have actually agreed with free market economists and said, yes, capitalism is the most productive and efficient economic system ever devised by man. The problem with capitalism, said Marx, was that it's immoral and unjust. So what you've had in the 20th century is Marx and his descendants captured the moral high ground. People like Milton Friedman and the free market economists captured the economic high ground. But in any battle of ideas between morality and economics, over the long term, morality always wins. So we decided that we would create this new university-based institute and that we would focus on the moral foundations of capitalism. And we're the only ones doing it. And I think it's the most important area in which capitalism has to be defended.
I am absolutely enthralled with what you just said. If you lived near me, we'd be like best friends. I mean, I'm enthralled with your book. I'm enthralled with what you. I don't even know. I'm like gushing over here. I feel like a 14-year-old at a rock concert or something. The reason it was so powerful, I have been saying, like, my life depended on it. That the atmosphere we're in now mirrors similar to the founding fathers, that period, and that it was this ideas, these concepts, these, you know, ideas are bulletproof, as it said in the movies. The ideas and the moralities moved and endured everything and really is what brought our country to fruition. That's what I feel. Do you agree with me? Do you see the parallels there?
I do. So let me start in our time today and take a very concrete political issue that we've seen in the last 20 years. And I mention this example as sort of proof of my larger point about the importance of defending capitalism on moral grounds. So under the administration of George W. Bush, the Republicans passed the prescription drug bill, which was the largest advance increase in the welfare state since the 1960s. So in other words, under conservatives and Republicans, and at that time, conservatives controlled the White House, Congress, and the Supreme Court, you end up getting more welfare, a further advance of a socialist principle. Now, why is that? It's because conservatives and Republicans were unable to make the moral argument against the idea that health care is a right. And so they agreed with the left that, yes, health care is a right. We can just deliver it more efficiently than you can. And I think that argument is completely wrong. I think that what they should have done is that they should have argued that health care is, or any other thing like any other good and service, education, food, shelter, clothing, etc., these are not rights. And certainly America's founding fathers never would have even understood the idea that food, clothing, shelter, health care, education, whatever, are rights. That's not how they understood what rights are. Rights are, you don't have a right to things. And so what we've done is, in our age, is we've applied the socialist principle from that we get from Marx, namely, from each according to his ability to each according to his need, which is the dominant reigning moral philosophy of the age in which we live, held by even Republicans. And I think we've got to get away from that idea and return to what I think is the true principle, which comes out of the American Revolution, and that is that rights are the life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness, which is the right to freedom of action in a social context. That's what rights are, not a right to things.
Wow. I'm just sitting here listening because I'm just dumbfounded that somebody, there's very few people that understand this like you just, and can explain it like you just did. I've always been fascinated by the founders, in colleges. They've been demonized in public. They've been, Thomas Jefferson has been demonized completely unfairly and characterized as, you know, slave master and all this, which is ridiculous when you know his history. But the idea of socialism, there's many writings from the founders that talk directly about socialism, and all these things, even with King George, even with the Revolution, piggybacking on what you said, they used a moral argument, an enlightened argument, even a Christian argument in some certainly ways. I would argue that certainly all those things came out of the Christian background, or at least fit with it, but that's another discussion. One of the things they said about socialism, the reason why socialism is wrong and evil, we can argue about whether it's good or not, or effective or not, but thou shalt not steal, and thou shalt not covet, the Ten Commandments. I mean, our founders, a lot of them wrote that way. I thought that was fascinating.
They did. And America did have, of course, very early experiments in socialism. The first, of course, was at Plymouth. When the Plymouth Colony was founded in 1620, and it only took Governor Bradford of the Plymouth Colony about less than a year to figure out that socialism was a complete disaster, which it was, right? It led to the so-called starving times. And so he abandoned socialism almost immediately. And interestingly, John Marshall, the first great Supreme Court justice, in a biography that he wrote in the early 19th century of George Washington, has a wonderful history of the Plymouth Colony, and he demonstrates from the perspective of the early 19th century how and why socialism was a disaster in the early 20th century, in the early 17th century, and of course the position of America's founding fathers uniformly across the board, and they couldn't have even really understood what socialism was at that time. They believed in a philosophy of limited government and individual rights, the primary one of which was property rights, and they held property rights as an absolute right that was not to be disturbed by government, and they absolutely did not believe in the redistribution of wealth from Peter to pay for Paul.
There's a line in your book, and I got this thing all marked up. I'm just so impressed with what you've done here. And this is on page 214. There's a starting on the first page. Jefferson and his fellow Americans saw moral action as inextricably connected with happiness, as was immorality with suffering. For both Aristotle and Cicero, the greatest ancient influences on Jefferson, as he wrote the Declaration, virtue is a critical component of happiness. As John Adams put it, happiness can never be found without virtue. Okay, I was stunned that somebody put in the book and could explain this in such a unbelievable ways. Really, ladies and gentlemen, you talk about one of those books to put on your shelf and you just have to have this and understand this and just have it there. This is one of those books. Please explain liberty and virtue and the connection to them and what our founders thought about them.
Well, I would put it this way. Liberty was the end and virtue was the means. So what is liberty? Liberty is the freedom of action in a social context where you are free of government coercion. That's how they meant, and that's what they meant by liberty. Virtue is the necessary means by which to live in a free society, right? You can't have a free society that consists of moral reprobates, right? You need to have a society, a free society, if you are to have a free society, made up of individuals who are self-owning, self-governing, self-regulating, and self-sustaining in their lives. And what you need most of all is the virtue of self-governance. And the virtue of self-governance consists of a whole series of virtues, namely, for instance, rationality, independence, honesty, productiveness, et cetera, et cetera. And those are precisely the kinds of virtues that you would have seen in ordinary, everyday Americans in the 18th century. So, for instance, let me give you one very concrete example. You may have heard of this wonderful new book by the public historian David McCullough called The Pioneers, and it's a history of how American revolutionaries and soldiers from the Revolutionary Army in the 1780s and 1790s, they left the East Coast, they left Boston, New York, Philadelphia, and they all moved west, and they crossed over the Ohio River, and they essentially founded the state of Ohio. Now, there was no government there, right? Where they lived, there was no government. And so they had to live completely self-governing lives. They had to build their own barns. They had to build their own roads and bridges. And they grew their own crops. And they governed themselves in a free society. And you can only do that if you have the virtues necessary first to, in a sense, combat Mother Nature. Mother Nature is a force that has to be contended with. And, you can't live a slothful life when in fact your very existence depends on you, you know, getting up every day and working a 16-hour day in order just to survive. And so what you end up having is several generations of Americans who developed these manners and mores and habits and virtues of self-governance, largely in part, I think, because, you know, for most of American history up until the beginning of the 20th century, we always had a frontier. And wherever you had a frontier in society, right, that meant people who were living, in effect, on the edge of civilization, away from government. And when you live away from government, you are entirely self-reliant. You must be self-reliant if you're going to survive and thrive. And so it was over the course of almost 300 years that Americans, by virtue of necessity, developed all of these extraordinary virtues of self-reliance, making Americans, I think, the most self-reliant people in the history of the world.
Is there any reason why these ideas and what you just said can't exist today, or they can't be in practice today in a modern society?
Yeah, no, there's no reason, and I think in many ways, many, maybe even still most Americans to one degree or another still have these virtues, right? So if you live in a free society, there will always be a frontier, right? So there's a sense in which, right, the Western frontier, that has disappeared, to be sure. But in a free capitalist society, there are always new frontiers to discover. There are frontiers under the surface of the oceans. There are frontiers in space. There are new frontiers that scientists see when they look, you know, through the lens of a microscope, right? And as long as people are free to discover these new frontiers in life, right, they will always require virtues necessary to get to that place, wherever that place is. But the single most important factor in developing a virtuous citizenry, in my view, is freedom, right? You can't, I do not believe that government can make individuals virtuous. I think the single most important factor in making individuals morally virtuous, just in their ordinary lives day to day, is freedom. Freedom, I would say freedom, two things, freedom plus education, right? If you are free, you must, if you want to live and survive and live well, you must live your life according to certain virtues, because if you don't, you will fail in everything. So it's in your self-interest to be morally virtuous.
I'm, you know, reading your book, one of the things that I did not realize to the extent was how, I would use the word philosophers, or even John Adams, who was, you know, probably extremely religious compared to Jefferson. I wouldn't consider Jefferson quote-unquote religious. That doesn't mean he wasn't Christian or that philosophy. He just wasn't religious. That doesn't mean anything to me. I was really curious, and it really moved me, how philosophical they were. John Locke, of course, you know, from the 1600s, his philosophy and even the term pursuit of happiness coming from him. They really thought and pondered about the meaning of life. These were not, you know, this idea of uneducated hicks or whatever, out of touch with modern society. They really looked through the spectrum and the lens of history and concocted or whatever, or used their experience to formulate these concepts and ideas that went into the revolution. I don't think there's anything comparable in our society. This was an unbelievable venture in a focusing of core beliefs and ideas that turned into what would become America. Your thoughts, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I'd agree 100%. And so what I would say is that the most famous of our founding fathers, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, James Wilson, for instance, and many others, Daniel Delaney, Richard Bland, John Dickinson, these were all highly, highly educated individuals, right? They had been educated at America's best universities at the time, and they had been educated in the ideas of the Enlightenment, of the European Enlightenment. And it's interesting that John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, and James Wilson all identified Sir Francis Bacon, Sir Isaac Newton, and John Locke as the three greatest thinkers of all time. And Jefferson, Adams, and Wilson didn't go to university together. They went to different universities at that time in the mid 18th century, and yet these were the ideas that they were exposed to, and they helped bring those ideas to America and to spread those ideas through American culture. So the bottom line is that America's leading statesmen, revolutionaries, and our deepest political thinkers were all highly educated in the ideas of the Enlightenment. But there's a second part of the story which, to me, is actually even more interesting. And that is, it's not just the most elite American revolutionaries who were reading, for instance, John Locke, the great 17th century English philosopher. It turns out virtually everybody in American society, from the most elite, you know, Ivy educated revolutionaries down to uneducated hardscrabble farmers living in western Massachusetts, were also reading Locke. So if you look at some of the pamphlet literature in these western frontier locations, and if you look at some of their petitions and remonstrances that they were writing during the years of the imperial crisis, what you see is all of these, you know, hardscrabble, uneducated farmers quoting John Locke. I mean, it's really quite remarkable. And I mean, they were influenced by three texts. They were influenced by the Bible, by Locke's Second Treatise of Government, and by the plays of Shakespeare. And that's you know, as I said, now for the third time, uneducated, hardscrabble farmers living on the frontier. I mean, it's really, if you think about it, it's really extraordinary. There is a sense in which 18th century Americans were the most enlightened Americans in the history of this country, and I mean that from top to bottom.
Fascinating. Wow. Well, you timed that right. There's the music. We got one break, and then the other side more. C. Bradley Thompson is the author. I call him Brad. America's Revolutionary Mind. Wow. If I had a Christmas card list, I'd put you on it. I love you. America's Revolutionary Mind. We'll be more.
Cool.
Or we'll be back with more from C. Bradley Thompson on the other side.
Hi, this is Jay at the Pyro Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at theparamall.com. That's theparamall.com. As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, New Manna Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Since H.G. Wells, everyone has speculated that the coming of an alien civilization would be to invade, plunder, and pillage our planet. But is that really the only scenario? Galacom 4 by Martin St. James ponders on a different type of alien visitation, one that has far-reaching implications to our modern-day society. Enter into a comical world where aliens visit planet Earth and take a peek as to how they would see us. Galacom 4, The End Is Near is available to the Power Hour listeners through Amazon, and if you hurry now, you'll receive a savings of $6 through the month of January. This is a very unique book that we are pleased to be promoting at the Power Hour. We promise you will be engaged and entertained from start to finish. Visit thepowerhour.com or call 877-817-9829 for more information. Again, that's 877-817-9829.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams Probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Paramol began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
With dozens of food and storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Humana Food Storage is nutritious, is GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Humana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. Call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com.
America made good for you. Food stores I love to eat. Yum!
It's been a pleasure getting to know Brad C. Bradley Thompson. The book America's Revolutionary Mind. You can get it wherever books are sold, Barnes & Noble or what have you. I want to make you aware of the specials we have over at the Power Mall. Of course, 20 years ago or so, Joyce got together this group, coagulated the products. Are there natural products out there? Are there things that can actually work and help and bless our lives? Yes, there are. Buy from the good guys, all at the Power Mall. We have sales on the Super Krill Oil is available, the Super Silver, 10 parts per million, Chaga Max from North America Urban Spice. Back by popular demand, if you tell us you want something that we don't have or discontinued, just let us know. We'll, if enough people, we'll get it. The Lateral Flora Probiotic from Dr. Group, the Liver Trex from Global Healing Center, flash sale on the potassium. We may be out of that. I don't know why this is still, I still got it on my list. Anyway, call, buy one, get one 50% off. If you haven't ordered in a while or this is your first time ordering, you get 10% off. Use the code FIRST10 at checkout online. And of course, this whole month, DEC5, if you purchase $50 or more, or DEC10, $100 or more, we'll take money right off your bill, right there, right off the charge. So we really appreciate you. Of course, Vitamir. The Vitamir products, the bundles, the toothpaste bundles. Everybody needs to brush their teeth, don't they? Mouthwash. Buy from the good guys. Support us. This money goes right into hearing guests like Laura Presley earlier, like Brad right now. The hair care bundle. You want a shampoo with no sodium lauryl sulfates in it? I do. Lavender conditioner. The winter wellness bundle, oregano oil, super silver, silver lozenges all together. Those silver lozenges are great, by the way. And also the podcast. We had a real problem. Our internet, some plug-in, whatever. I am not a computer expert, but I know what it breaks. That's what I know, like you do. And then you call us. Well, our podcast is back up. That connect. There was some sort of whatever, in the ether. So now the podcasts are all updating. You can get them iTunes, wherever, across the globe. And snail mail. If you want to mail us something personally, the Power Hour, P.O. Box 519, Marshfield, Missouri, 65706. Later this week, Robert Redfern will be on at the end of the week, and also Sherry Tenpenny, and next week is of course, Christmas. I'm not sure of our schedule yet. We may do a show Monday. That I'm not sure, but there'll be replays. Please think of us. You know, this is how we pay the, we don't get a check from George Soros. We get checks from you and support from you. Your energy, your passion, your purchases, your prayers. That's why we're here. It's so good to be with you. Thank you for all your support, and you're welcome for what we do. It's worth it. You make it worth it. We love humanity. We love, or I should say mankind. We love mankind. We love this, whatever, this divinity within us and the potential and the pursuit of happiness. And we want you to be happy, healthy, successful, and free as God intends you to be. Check out the Power Mall, thepowermall.com, 877-817-9829 is the phone number. Getting back to our guest. This is really a high-level philosophical discussion. This can go in a lot of different ways. The ideas are bulletproof, and ideas built one on top of the other, and the greatest idea, the philosophical concept, was enshrined in the Declaration of Independence. I think it is the greatest political document or political moment or whatever we've probably seen in recorded history, at least maybe since the Mosaic Law. I don't know. It's almost virtually unprecedented. Maybe some of the Lakota or the Indian, the Seven Nations treaties, excuse me, had some of this influence. But the concept and the idea that something is inside you that is beyond man's control, that your creator has endowed you with, and the ability and almost the compulsion to then pursue that, which is over, supersedes government, there's no idea quite like that. I'm being a little hyperbolic here. Brad, but your comment or your thoughts on any of that?
No, I think that's exactly right. So let me remind your audience of the most famous sentence in American history, in American literature, which I think bears repeating all the time. The second paragraph of the Declaration begins with these eloquent and stirring words. We hold these truths to be self-evident. Full stop.
Wow.
Right? Now, why do I emphasize that? Because the Declaration of Independence and America's revolutionary generation believed that there are truths that are absolute, certain, permanent, and universal. They did not believe, as we do today, that truth is subjective. In 2016, the Oxford English Dictionary declared as its word of the year post-truth, right? And it's the case that on most university and college campuses, most professors in the humanities don't believe in the concept truth. Truth is absolute, certain, permanent, and universal. They believe that we live in a post-truth society, that truth is entirely subjective to individual whims. And I think that is incorrect, and I absolutely know with certainty that America's founding fathers could not have even conceptualized what it would mean to live in a post-truth society. So the first thing that I think we have to do in reconsidering the principles of the American founding is to begin at the foundation, and the foundation is the concept truth. And I think that is, in many ways, at sort of the highest philosophic level of abstraction, the single most important thing that we have to re-engage with in 21st century America. Is just as absurd as this might sound, we have to rediscover the idea of truth. Because if you can't believe, you don't believe in the concept of truth, then there's nothing else to even talk about.
Wow. I'm going to read an excerpt from your book and get your response. This, tears almost came. Sometimes you're caught at certain moments. And I was just really going through your book. I was flipping back and forth pages and just kind of skimming. And I read this, and it struck me like a boulder. This is on page 165. This is quotes from John Adams and also Philip Livingston to reiterate what you're saying here. John Adams located the source of man's rights, quote, in the frame of human nature and in the constitution of the intellectual and moral world. Philip Livingston, the New York delegate to the Continental Congress and a signer of the Declaration of Independence, declared in 1774 that, quote, the Great Charter of man's rights may be read in the human frame. It was a charter sealed with the breath of life. And I read that and I about gasped. I mean, really, the profoundness of that and the superseding concept that lays out. And when you look across the world of who we are, our purpose, our right, our potential, where we come from, why are we here? It's like, dear God, in the very breath of life, in our human nature, our founding fathers thought the answer to all these questions were found in our very existence, and that government, this has nothing to do with, government is a sideshow, and that all the world's history has been this effort to control this breath of life, but the breath of life cannot be controlled, and your potential, that even property, that the ability to acquire property and to pursue property, and that property is even created and enhanced, it is only moved forward by this breath of life that is in us. And what in the world does government have to do with it at all? It blew me away. I mean, I was floored by it, Brad.
Well, what you just said was also, I think, remarkably eloquent and thoughtful. And so, I mean, as an historian and a political philosopher, I've got an easy job. Namely, I get to read the writings of some of the greatest thinkers and statesmen in world history who thought long, seriously, and deeply about these most important questions. And you're absolutely right. For America's revolutionary founders, they did not think that rights are gifts given to us by government. In fact, in many ways, that was a position that they were explicitly rejecting, because that was, in effect, that was the position of British imperial officials during the 1760s and 1770s. They believed that rights were something that were granted to you by Parliament. And American revolutionaries said, no, rights are found, they are discovered, that's even a better word, I think, rights are discovered through an analysis of human nature, what human nature is. And of course, unlike today in the 21st century, America's founding fathers believed that human nature is fixed. Human nature is not fluid. There was no trans this, trans that in the 18th century. Human nature is fixed, and human nature can be examined. And someone like John Adams, for instance, from the time he was a young man, he was a student of human nature, and he examined human nature in one of three ways, or I should say, actually in all three ways. That is, first, you look out into the world, you observe the people who are, you know, in your eyesight, within your earshot, and you observe how people act. And that is to view, that is to say, the sort of the consequences of their actions, their motivations, and ultimately their purposes. And then secondly, you can also view human nature by introspection, by looking inward on yourself and trying to understand how it is, why it is, for instance, that you get angry in certain kinds of situations. You can look inside and try to understand the source of your longing for another person. And then finally, they looked at history. They were great students of history. And what they were really looking for were, one might say, the laws of nature as they are derived from human nature. And from that examination of human nature in those three ways, they were able to induce certain what we might call moral laws and rights of nature. And because they were grounded in something which is absolute, universal, and permanent, namely human nature, then they were able to induce laws and rights of nature that were likewise absolute, certain, permanent, and universal.
I mean, even what you just said blew me away. I'm just blown away by this, because this is, we sit in here debate, we have political debates all the time, what have you, people trash Thomas Jefferson statues, all this, they didn't know what they're talking about, let's throw this away. You're talking about but they put on a piece of paper, there is no nation in this world that honors that endowment, that human nature, this self-evident truth. It's not even worth arguing about, but yet every university in this country proliferates the opposite. That's what's so disturbing to me. This is such a self-evident truth that let me read a quote from your book. Again, ladies and gentlemen, you want a book for Christmas? You want a book to give to somebody? You want a book on your shelf that you just have to have? I don't care if you use it as a doorstop in your home. This book needs to be in your home. Listen to this quote. This is Brad. The freedom to think is both an aspect and requirement of human flourishing. Freedom is to man's reason what oxygen is to lungs. And the concept of greater good, we hear that shoved down our throat. Well, for the greater good, we have to let the homeless sleep on the street, and we need to take money from you and to feed Tommy. So we take money from Peter, rob Peter to pay Paul so that he can have a good experience, because his greater good. The founders thought just the opposite. The greatest good that can be done, the self-evident truth to them, is that they were able to pursue happiness. Not happiness given to them, pursue happiness. And that happiness cannot result as an action of government. Government cannot give you happiness. And the greatest goal, the greatest reach of man's achievement would be to achieve what? Happiness. The whole reason that was what our founders thought. Your greatest achievement will be to get happiness. The pursuit of happiness must then be guaranteed by law so that the greatest good in society can happen. And without this liberty to pursue that happiness, there can be no virtue. And without acting with virtue, there can be no freedom. Because if you manipulate virtue, now you manipulate liberty. Because now you think of it, well, liberty then is me taking from Peter to rob Paul. So it's like a teeter-totter. So you manipulate the virtue, then you have to rob from the liberty. You rob from the liberty, and now the virtue can't even act. And now we have children in school being taught about, you know, anal sex at 5 years old. So it goes both ways. I am floored by this book, ladies and gentlemen. And that somebody can explain this in such a concrete way, I don't even know what I'm asking you. I'm just, you've been so inspired me, Brad. Whatever your comment on that.
There's a lot there, and I guess
pursuit
what
of happiness.
Say,
let me tell you, pursuit of happiness. This concept it's almost a very curious phrase. Obviously, it probably originated with Locke in some ways. Talk about that pursuit of happiness.
Sure. So let's take the two principal words, happiness and pursuit. So the first thing to say about happiness is that the founding fathers believed that there were two kinds of happiness. There was what you might call fleeting or short-term happiness. You know, when you have a good meal or something very ephemeral where you're happy just in the moment. But that kind of happiness oftentimes can lead to negative things. It can lead actually even to destructive consequences. So if you like, for instance, beer or chocolate, and you spend every day all day eating chocolates and drinking beer, and you think that gives you happiness, there will ultimately be negative consequences, because in the end, because of the founders' view of the relationship between morality and nature, nature will actually come back to punish you, right? So in other words, happiness, like the founders' view of rights, is connected to nature. Nature gives man certain guidelines as to what he can pursue in order to be happy. And so that goes then to the founders' second understanding, the deeper view of happiness. happiness and the one they promoted, which is a kind of long-term or what they call true or real happiness. And real or true happiness is not something that comes and goes. It's not ephemeral. It's something that is long-lasting, and it's the result of having achieved one's highest values. So when you've done something in your life that you worked hard for, you know, for days, weeks, months, even years, and you struggled, but then eventually, you know, you achieve it. You get to the mountaintop. The happiness that you derive from that kind of action is much greater, it's much deeper, and much more long-lasting than this kind of short-term happiness, ephemeral or sensual happiness, you could even call it. Now, what about pursuit? Well, what they meant by the pursuit is that happiness does not grow on trees. Happiness is not given to us by government. Happiness has to be achieved. And in order to achieve happiness, you have to be free. But it's not just the freedom to be happy. You also have to live your life according to certain virtues. And in order to achieve happiness, in order to achieve your highest values in life, you have to work for them, and that means you have to live your life a certain way, according to certain virtues, as I indicated earlier, rationality, honesty, independence, integrity, productiveness, right? All of those virtues are a means to achieving a higher end, which in this particular case, the ultimate, the highest, the architectonic end is happiness.
You know, it's very interesting. Everything you just said, everything, in and of itself has nothing to do with government, meaning government has nothing to do to enhance that potential. Nothing. They don't give it to you. They can't. The only thing they can do is destroy it. So the government that the founders formed, it even says in the Declaration of Independence, it's their safety and happiness. That's all government's purpose is to protect that. And government's only legitimate role, this is something many of the founders said in various forms, is to then, what would you say, mediate the conduct between people. So if you want to go get drunk all day and sit in your house and whatever, then go ahead. But when you start to then now hurt somebody else with your actions, that's different. Now government steps in because you're hurting their pursuit of happiness. If you want to pursue happiness, you're left to that choice. Now, if you want to affect somebody else's pursuit of happiness and disparage or destroy their pursuit, that's a different thing. Those are actually two different things. Here's a quote. And this is going to get a little esoteric, but I'll go ahead and ask you. And by the way, I need to come speak at Clemson with you sometime. I need to come to this university and see what kind of place actually has a professor like you. I am floored by you, by the way.
We'd love to have you come down to Clemson.
Okay, I'm going to be in touch. Believe me, I'm about your best friend right now. Me and you are friends now. I just can't get over this book, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, I'm going to read a couple quotes, and then I got a question for you. It cannot be emphasized too strongly or too often that this great nation was founded not by religionists, but by Christians, not on religions, but on the gospel of Jesus Christ. The highest glory of the American Revolution was this, that it connected in one indissoluble bond the principle of civil government with the principles of Christianity. Okay, when people hear that, I got a question here. We only got 2 or 3 minutes, but this is important. The basic, even Greek mythology talks about this with Ares and Zeus. Ares was upset with Zeus because Zeus gave divinity or fire to man, and Ares was going to go about and then prove that Zeus made a mistake giving divinity to man. The Luciferian doctrine basically is that God has sentenced mankind to a lifetime of misery because he gave them choice. And so it's this choice. So Lucifer's mission now is to prove that the choice is the problem. We got to get rid of choice and everybody will be happy and everything will be okay. The Christian Christian doctors know the liberty of freedom, the liberty of choice, the liberty, this divinity cannot be controlled, cannot be pinned down. And this is the philosophy that the founders had, that they would be able to go forth in their life with this inherent endowment, this unalienable endowment that nobody can touch, that government has no concept of, that they were to go forward. And so you have the that Christian view, biblical view, the dominion of God juxtaposed against this idea, and socialism, which really says, for the greater good, you have to juxtapose your pursuit of happiness for this greater good that we define for you. To me, that's what that quote means. Do you, your comments, your statement to that?
So I'm hearing that for the first time. So it would take me a little bit to sort of think through.
Well, you got 2 minutes, Brad.
You got 2 minutes. But I will say this, that I want to just go back to something you actually had said a few minutes ago, and that is, you know, as I've said earlier, the Declaration lists 4 self-evident truths. The first one is equality. All men are created equal. The second one, right, is that they are endowed with unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But it's the third one I want to bring your attention to, in which you essentially mentioned yourself. And the third self-evident truth of the Declaration says that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Now, what does that mean? That means that the purpose, indeed, the sole purpose of government in a just society is the protection of individual rights. That's
wow.
It.
Wow.
It's not to redistribute wealth. It's not to make men good. It's just simply to protect their rights. And so that means, by definition, that the government, built on the moral foundations of the Declaration of Independence, will be necessarily limited to just
turn that music
those
down, Todd.
Purposes. And that's it.
Wow. I can't, ladies and gentlemen, I've been doing this show, since Joyce, 3.5 years? I have not had a book that has inspired me more than this book. I love this book. I love this. I'm going to get copies of this and give them away as gifts. America's Revolutionary Mind is the name of the book. C. Bradley Thompson. It is an absolute pleasure to meet you. We probably got about 20 seconds. I don't know what you want to say. We will be in touch, my friend, and I got to have you on again. And I am coming to Clemson to speak with you. Anyway, go ahead. Last 10 seconds is yours.
Let's all rally around the idea of Americanism. America is the only nation in the history of the world that is an ism, and that ism is associated with the principles of the Declaration of Independence.
Bam. God bless you. See you tomorrow.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.